Did he go? Strike three is called. The Royals held to just two hits, and the Twins win the opener 2-0.
I hear that cut to start the show, and the Royals are held to two hits, and I think a major league, these guys are bleep. Oh, one, well, it's
one
all
hit,
over.
One gosh darn
one
hit.
God dang it. Two gosh darn hits. And we're doing the PG rating. If you've seen Major League, you know what we're talking about. Well, welcome to the show. Wade, Dusty, and Jason with you on this last day of March. The Royals wish the season didn't start till tomorrow because they weren't really ready to go yesterday with the bats, and the Royals lose their season opener. So, guys, I think it's safe to say it's time to start the watch and tick, 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 tick. When does Chiefs training camp begin? Notice that Dusty was wearing a Royals shirt yesterday. Today he's wearing a Super Bowl shirt of the Chiefs. I think that represents everyone that is a Royals/Chiefs fan already today. Oh, yeah. Is yesterday, we're all gloriously waiting for opening day, wearing our Royals gear. And then today, I know the Royals don't play today, off day. Dusty, right back into the Chiefs
gear,
baby.
I had to feel better about Kansas City sports, so I put the Super Bowl champion shirt on.
I do it, too. Goodness. I do it, too. Like, my team won, so I'm like, yeah.
Rub it in a little bit more, Broadfoot.
They look great. They look great. They're like, I don't see how this team can't go to the World Series. But we know there's, like, 161 more of these. So
doesn't it seem like this happens to the Royals almost every year? And I know it's not every year. There was a year they started 9-0. They started out great when they won it in 15 and so forth and so on. But doesn't it seem like this has kind of been a trend the last few years that – spring training, tear the cover off the ball, win a whole bunch of games, and then the first series of the season can't score, leave runners in scoring position, or low scoring games where the starters are awesome. I know last year the starting pitching, last 2 years I think, the starting pitching's been really good, and the Royals offense can't do anything. And Zach Greinke, bless your heart, just asked to be traded now. It's because, I mean, I love that Zach's in the powder blue uniforms and playing for the Royals, but, you know, that guy might have lost 40 wins in his career. He might be a surefire Hall of Famer if he didn't pitch for the Royals, because how many times, even his Cy Young award winning year, the argument was he didn't win enough games. Yeah, because nobody scored for him in his Cy Young award winning year, where he won 16, I think, games. Should have won 22 that year. So it's just been a common thing. You can change out the players and change out the positions and change out the bullpens, and Zach will keep doing what he does, and the Royals will keep doing what they do, and that is they refuse to score runs for Zach Greinke. I don't know if they just don't like the guy or what. I'm kidding. There's nothing to do with that. But yesterday, Zach Greinke, 5 scoreless innings. Comes in, comes back out in the 6th after the Royals ground into a very odd double play. MJ Melendez was ahead 3-0 with the bases loaded. Then it's 3-2. And a slow roller, first baseman charges, throws home, and the second baseman was alert to cover. And it was just your standard 3-2-4 double play. You rarely see that. A 3-2-4 double play to get out of bases loaded jam. And, of course, what happens? Greinke comes back for the 6th, gives up a base hit, boom! That runner comes around to score when the bullpen comes in, Amir Garrett, and just like that, Greinke's on the hook for a loss instead of a no decision when he should be, you know, honestly, in line for a W. And so Zach Greinke may pitch great again this year and get all 3 wins. Wasn't it last year where his ERA was under 3 and he didn't get a win for like 2 or 3 months to start the season?
I believe so, yeah.
It was not good. So the Royals, they're not going to go undefeated, darn it. And yesterday, Derek Nestor, our web guy, webmaster, whatever you want to call him, Derek, he of course is in Kansas City and he loves the sports and the Chiefs and the Royals and so forth and so on. And we made our predictions yesterday and Dusty said 75 wins, I think. And Dusty might have been 74. Yeah. Jason was 75. Mm-hmm. I was 78. I was Mr. Optimistic. And then Derek sends a text 72. And I said, man, what a pessimist. He goes, or maybe I'm a realist. And I said, maybe both. And 1 minute later, he goes, did you see that play? And that's when they grounded into the weird double play. And he's like, hello, this is why. So ladies and gentlemen, 24 hours later on the sports ticket, I'm ready to revise my Royals prediction. I'm going to go with 50 and 112. Yes.
The hope of spring did not last long.
My optimism went to pessimism, kaboom, like that. Okay, I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to overreact because of just one game. And they will eventually hit. And Bobby Witt Jr. was in the leadoff spot, which I like that. Salvi's in the 3-hole. The cleanup was Pascatino. Oliveras started and left instead of Jackie Bradley Jr., which is fine with me. Younger guy. Salvi is the fourth captain in Royals history. That was a cool honor that they showed there yesterday online. So that's pretty cool. And then at the end of the day, they got two measly hits, struck out 11 times, which has been a problem for the Royals with the previous regime. One game in, Matt Cochera's team is 11 strikeouts, only two hits, no runs. But once again, it's just one game. So tomorrow, the Royals will send out Jordan Lyles, who they picked up as a free agent pitcher. Gives up a lot of homers, but he's in a pitcher's park. He can eat innings, and he will be on the hill tomorrow. Zach Greinke took the loss yesterday, and he goes 5 1/3, two runs, six hits, deserved better. And, yeah, that two runs in the top of the sixth, that was the game. 2-0 Twins. Royals couldn't do anything with the bases loaded in the bottom of the fifth, and the Twins make them pay immediately in the sixth. And so the Royals will pick things up again coming up tomorrow in game two of the series. Here is the new manager on Zach Greinke's performance.
I thought he was great. I mean, if we could have ordered 5+ and one run from him on opening day, we would all sign up for that any day of the week. And, you know, 20-something pitches in the first, and then to be really efficient from then on out was tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, you can't ask for anything better than what Zach Greinke gave the Royals yesterday, and that's what you want out of your starting pitcher. Early in the year, you're not going to go 7 or 8 innings or anything quite like that, usually. But if you give him 5+ early and your bullpen's all rested and ready to go and you have an off day coming up after the opening day, like they do today, off day and then tomorrow, Greinke did what he was supposed to do, but the offense did not. And the Royals lose 3-10 first pitch coming up tomorrow at the K. All right, Dusty, local sports. We got some track and field last night. We also have a coach that you had a chance to catch up to yesterday, previewing track and field. And we got some baseball, softball today, Cloud County All-Star Games. We were able to gather information about those games, which is highly impressive, and we were more than pleased to have that. So I'll turn it over to Dusty.
Yes, we'll go results yesterday first. Lacrosse Track and Field Invitational, where the Osmond girls finished in second place with 77 points behind Larded in first with 103. Individually, girls shot put, Grace William took the gold medal for Osmond at 38.1.5. And then 3,200-meter run, freshman Raya Berticelli of Osmond took first place, 16.33.30. Also, Gracie Reiner of Osmond finished in second in the javelin and discus. Addison Poor finished second, or actually Gracie finished third in the discus, second in the javelin. Addison Poor was second in both the 800 and 400-meter runs there. And then 4x800-meter relay, Osborne finished second place. Osborne boys finished in third place. Plainville won the meet with 122 points, really kind of ran away with that one individually for the Osborne boys. No gold medal winners, but second place finish for Johnny Hamel in the 3,200-meter run. They also got second in the 4x8. And quite a few third-place finishes. Hunter Howell in the long jump. Nathan Goheen in the 110-meter hurdles. Connor Shear, the 400-meter dash. Aiden Conrad, 3,200-meter run. Both the 4x1 and 4x400-meter relay teams finished in third for Osborne as well. We hope to have something that I can post like with the full results on it. I was getting those off of live results, and it's not conducive for people to navigate very well. So hopefully I'll find something this morning. We can post those full results at ncksports.com. Today there are also three more area teams that'll open. By the way, if you want to listen to my interview with Steve Tiernan, it's a little bit outdated because they started their season yesterday, but he'll tell you a little bit about the team here this year. You can go back and listen to that on the Sports Ticket Podcast at katycountry94.com if you're interested in that. There is activity today, again, baseball and softball coming up here today as Beloit will be at Ellsworth in both baseball and softball. Softball teams are both 2-0 for the Letty Trojans and Letty Bearcats. Starting with the doubleheader at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And then Beloit baseball 0-2, Ellsworth 2-0. Doubleheader again at 4 o'clock today there in Ellsworth. NCAA league openers for the Beloit baseball and softball teams today. I'm going to come back to track and field because I want to tell you a little bit about the T-Bird Invitational. Cloud County coming up tomorrow, the All-Stars, and then we're going to hear from another coach coming up here momentarily as well. There will be girls and boys basketball games and a volleyball match on Sunday at Arleigh Bryant Gymnasium in Concordia with that Cloud County T-Bird All-Star Invitational. The girls' basketball game will tip at 1. Area athletes that are playing there, Kylie Bergman of Lakeside, Trinity Looters of Osborne, Lauren Welchel from Rock Hills, St. John's Stella Wiles, and Keely Kenobi of Sylvan Lucas from the MPL, and also Miley Raby of Smith Center, along with Hannah Acree and Sienna DeLeon of Concordia, selected to play there. And then the boys' basketball game will tip at 3 o'clock. Area MPL athletes are Dylan Bice and Jayshon Dodds from Thunder Ridge, Tegan Reeves of Pike Valley, and along with Ace and Cash from Concordia, and Thunder Ridge coach Devon Branch, who actually played college basketball at Cloud County. He's going back there. He'll be one of the coaches for the boys coming up there on Sunday in the basketball contest. All-star volleyball match is at 5 o'clock on Sunday at Wiles of St. John's. Kenobi from Sylvan Lucas, Arabia Smith Center, and Acree of Concordia, who are all picked for the basketball game, are also selected to play in the volleyball match, while Lauren Flavin of Pike Valley and Shaylin Gears from Concordia round out area selections. You can find the full rosters for the T-Bird All-Star Invitational at ncksports.com. So that's all posted there if you're interested in seeing who's playing here this weekend on Sunday at Cloud County. Again, coming back to track and field here for today, there are three other area teams that will be opening their seasons today, including St. John's, Rock Hills, and Lincoln. They'll all be competing, and that starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon in the Bennington Track and Field Invitational. And we had a chance to catch up with Clint Herenick, who has been the junior high coach but also an assistant coach for the St. John's Blue Jays. And we're going to hear from Clint Herenick to preview St. John's track and field.
Before we get to that, I want to tease people that we have a really cool baseball story to share with you that we've discovered today on Twitter. It's a wedding proposal that went really, really wrong at Dodger Stadium. So that's coming up, along with a look at the Final Four for the women and the men. So stay tuned for that. Come up on the ticket. But we did indeed have a chance to catch up with Clint Herenick, and here is that interview.
Welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Clint Herenick joining us now, the head coach of the St. John's track and field teams there in Beloit at St. John's Catholic High School. First of all, thanks for taking a little time to join us here, Coach, to preview the season. You'll get things going today here in the Bennington Invitational. When you look at your group, though, what are some of the things that you've seen so far as far as your practices are concerned, and how are things going, and what do your numbers look like so far here this year?
Yeah, thanks, Dusty. Thanks for having me. No, I'm excited this year. We've kind of got a little lower number than we had last year. I think we have 19 out. 12 of those are freshmen and sophomore, and then we have 7 upperclassmen. So kind of a smaller team than we've had in the past and a younger team than we've had in the past. But so far, our practices have been great. I mean, we've only, with both teams making it to state basketball, you know, we didn't start track till about a week after that, so we'll have a whole 9 practices under our belt before we go to Bennington. But, you know, all in all, so far, I think the kids are working real hard. I think, you know, we've got 2 state returners from last year, Jane and Jonas Letourneau, and obviously I think they're hoping to get back there this year, and we've got a few other kids with some high aspirations that, you know, performed pretty well the last couple of years in junior high, so... Yeah, so far it's been really good.
How much do you lean on maybe some of that state experience? Not maybe just the state experience, but just the experience that you have as a whole back with kids that have done this before, as you maybe kind of teach the kids in the practices and what you're doing here?
Yeah, I think it's huge to, you know, for me personally, be able to work with them starting in 6th grade and kind of build some of the fundamentals I want them to know then so that we, you know, don't waste as much time doing that in high school. And then obviously Jane and Jonas and some of our other juniors and seniors have been out for 3 or 4 years and are really hard workers and they just show up and they put the work in and they're good leaders for our freshmen and sophomore. So like I said, it's been fun this year and I enjoy seeing the kids that I had in junior high, you know, continue to strive to get better in high school.
When you go out to the first meet, when you hit the track and the field there in Bennington, what do you want to see from the group? What's something you're looking for as a coach? I mean, obviously, you're probably not looking for PRs at this time of the year, but what are some of your hopes here the first time out?
Yeah, just like you said, and I told the kids early on, you know, the way we train and the way we program is to peak at the end of the season and not to overdo it or to try to get ahead of ourselves. So, you know, we're just going to this first meet. I told the kids just kind of stay relaxed and go out there and give it your best. It gives us a kind of a good bar to start with. Even if you're not, you know, winning the way you wanted to win or setting the end of last season's PR, you know, we're in a place the kids are feeling fairly good, even though we haven't had much time. So just go out there and try not to be too nervous and just give it your all, and it'll set the bar to where we want to go the rest of the season.
I know you said you only have like 19 out, but are you fairly spread out with your events, or you have more field, more track? How's that look for you?
We're probably mostly track. I have just a couple, you know, 3 or 4 throwers and a few jumpers here and there. Probably I would say out of the 19, 8 are probably middle to long distance. And then Yeah, a lot of the shorter stuff, a couple javelin, a couple shot put. I've got six girls. Only one of them is a thrower. And then, well, I guess, sorry, only one of them is a shot put or discus thrower. I've got a couple javelin throwers. And then 13 boys, and most of those are track or jumping.
All right, Clint Hrenek, the head coach of the St. John's Blue Jay track and field teams. Coach, we certainly, again, thank you for taking the time and wish you the best of luck at the Bennington Invitational and moving forward this season.
All right, thanks, Dusty.
All right, so Clint Hrenek and, you know, all the spring sports coaches either underway or getting underway here, as we talked about, and deal with the wind. You got to deal with that now. Last night it was perfect temperature, but very, very windy when we had our baseball practice. So that's part of dealing with spring sports when you're outside, is, especially in the state of Kansas, is the conditions. And so every year we have some athletes that do very well for various schools, various classifications, whether it be whatever the sport. And I know coaches, just like Royals coaches, are for sure were eternally optimistic about everything until they just had two hits and 11 strikeouts in their opening game. But sounds like Coach Hrenek is excited about the season.
Yeah, I think he is, and they're ready to get out there today and see where they're at. And again, like you said, it sounds like it's going to be another windy one in Bennington today. I know that Coach Tiernan was complaining to me about that yesterday, that it was going to be really windy in lacrosse. And it's like, yeah, I don't think I went to a track meet last year that wasn't at least 30-mile-an-hour wind gusts. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was as windy at every one. And then it was cold last year at the first one I went to. And so it was – I lost my hat about four times at Osborne last year, I think. Yeah, but that's, you know, you never know what you're going to deal with, but you can deal with, you can guarantee you're not going to make it through the spring sports season without some windy conditions at some point.
Yes, yes, absolutely. All right, if you miss that interview, it'll be posted or is posted on our podcast page on social media as well. We mentioned the Royals. If you would still like to see the Royals, you can sign up to win two seats on our bus trip coming up Sunday afternoon, May 7th, as we cheer on the boys in blue, and they're going to need it. They need more hits. We're going to cheer them on. We're going to spur them on to have 22 hits and 18 runs that day as they host the Oakland A's. You can sign up to win seats on our bus trip because right now we are pretty much full in regards to the paid seats, but we have some that are left aside for our sign-up locations. And you can sign up in Cocker City at TJ's Liquor, and Glen Elder, sign up at Cunningham Telephone Cable, and Down, sign up Miller Hardware LLC, and Osborne at Gerard's Grocery Store, and Mankato, sign up at Mankato Express, and Mankato Professional Pharmacy, and Jewel, sign up at Bonnet Welding, and Beloit at Dairy Queen, Cunningham and Telephone and Cable, and Ray's Apple Market. So make sure that you sign up at those locations, like we talked about, we joked about before. You could make a road trip and sign up at every one of those locations if you wanted to, and then you have a chance to be drawn out. We will find out the winners at the end of April. We'll contact you there at the end of April, 1st of May, so you have time to join us for the Royals bus trip on Sunday, May the 7th. Now, if you don't want to wait and see if your name is drawn out, you can call the station at 545-3220 and be added to our waiting list. We did have a couple of people that were on a waiting list, and the other day, a couple had to back out because of a graduation that they weren't aware of, and so boom, the people on the waiting list slid right into those last two spots. But that could easily happen again. So if you want to go and you don't want to wait and see if your name is drawn out as a winner of these sign up locations, then just give us a call at 545-3220. We can put you on a waiting list, and perhaps you'll be able to go that way, or perhaps you will have your name drawn out of those location boxes so that you can go for free coming up on Sunday, May the 7th. More details available online, kdcountry94.com. Perhaps when we go to the Royals bus trip on May the 7th, we could see a really sentimental moment when a fan comes out on a field and proposes to his girlfriend. That already happened. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is one of those times where I really wish we weren't radio, that I could be on camera and I could just cut to this. But I absolutely started rolling laughing. I didn't know what was coming. I did not. So I'm watching this video that has gone viral now. You may have seen it. You maybe haven't. And if you haven't, you really need to. It might make you feel better. It might make you feel sorry for this poor guy. So there's this guy at Dodger Stadium. I see the video. And he's out on one knee in the left field grass. Okay? So he's out there on one knee. He has his little box with the ring. He's looking back in the left field stands, obviously at his girlfriend, and wants to make her his fiance and future wife-to-be. So he's out there, and I'm watching, and I'm like, okay, what's weird thing that's going to happen? Because I'm kind of giving a little bit of a tease here. And I'm thinking, okay, did he drop the ring? Does the girlfriend give him the bird? Is she start making out with somebody else in the stands? Those are the things going through my head. And so I'm watching, and he's nice, calm, and collected. He's on a knee. They show the camera going back to his girlfriend, and then it goes back to him, and it looks like they're starting to, maybe she's going to say yes, and a security guard comes out of nowhere and absolutely tackles and drills the guy, dislodging the box in the ring. And he's handcuffed, his hands behind his back, face first into the turf. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to give you a little bit of advice here. If you're going to have a wedding proposal and you want to do it at the ballpark, it is paramount that you first get permission from the baseball organization to be out on the outfield grass so that you can propose. And I just want to say to the woman that he was proposing to, if there's ever a man that deserves a woman to say yes, it is this guy. This guy went to jail for you. He trespassed for you. He took a tremendous shot from the security guard. It was a tougher hit than maybe you even see in an NFL football game. That guy might have suffered a concussion as well for you. And if you don't say yes, you may be the worst person on earth.
The best part is that hit was so unnecessary. The guy was on his knee, not
he was
even
a real
looking.
Threat, wasn't he?
Yeah, and just, you know, I know they're told to get rid of the threat, but you know,
or maybe this is the master plan, and now they plan to sue the security guard in Dodger Stadium, even though they trespassed.
What if he got the ring back?
I don't know.
If he held on to it, that's better than some of the running backs out there. But
you can't hear the audio, but can you imagine he's getting cuffed. His face is in the turf. Please find the ring. I don't care. I'll pay the fine. I'll go to jail. Find the ring. The ring's worth more than what bail's going to be, okay?
It's all confusing because she's yelling, no, no, no. But that, is that to the security guard or is that to him?
Well, if it's no, 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 yeah, that guy is the biggest loser of all time. If that's
if
a no, no, no.
She's yelling yes. Is she cheering for the security
I don't have
guard?
The sound on right now. Dude, that guy went above and beyond. And yeah, man, holy cow. She could have set him up pretty well, though, if she knew that was coming. He's running out there quick. Like, hey, I'm going to go propose to you on the Dodger Stadium outfield grass. Just say yes really, really fast. And then she's like, hold on a second. I got to get my camera out. Ah, darn it. It's installing an update. Hold on, honey. You'll be okay. Ooh.
This is why
that's going to leave a mark.
This is why you don't do this in public.
Yeah, don't do it in public. That's just, wow, that poor guy. That guy will have a story for the rest of his life if he can remember it.
It was somehow some botched gender reveal.
Those are pretty bad.
Yes,
those are kind of funny.
Those are, the only times I like to watch those are when they're just absolutely ruined.
Yeah, was there? I don't think the security guard actually needed to level him out.
No,
like
he didn't.
That.
But
no.
That's the best part. Like, he didn't need to, but yeah, he's going to take a shot.
Security guards, guys, enter.
I don't know if I'm ever going to get to do this again. Let's
right.
make it count.
Yep.
Dude, I got a sitting duck on one knee, and I'm going to nail him from the side. It won't be in the back, so it's not illegal. It won't be a flag.
Right.
I'm just going to drill him from the side. He won't even see it coming. And you know what? He didn't. Oh, man, he turns his head just at the last second, that poor guy proposing, and I didn't even see it coming. The old line for Dumb and Dumber. So, please, if you're going to propose to your significant other, don't do what that guy did. Although, if he sues and wins some kind of lawsuit, then it all worked out well, I guess.
The honeymoon will be all right.
Yeah, no kidding.
It feels like it'd be kind of hard to win a lawsuit when you're not out there.
You would think, but there are weird things that happen. I could already see it, though. It'd be like, well, yeah, I trespassed, but there was no need for the guy to the broadside me like that. And you know what? I mean, you could probably argue that, I guess. You can argue anything. North Texas beat UAB in the men's NIT last night. I'm sure everybody was glued to that one.
7-point lead, 11 seconds to play. UAB with the prayer, Jelly Walker, short, and that's going to do it. Hunsbury, Perry will dribble it out, and North Texas, for the first time in school history, NIT champs.
So North Texas wins, and then they lose their coach immediately. Mean Green coach Grant McCausland will be leaving North Texas to accept a 6-year, $18 million deal to coach Texas Tech. I'd say he has 18 million reasons to leave North Texas. $3 million per year, 6 years, $18 million. Yeah, why not? And they promoted the associate head coach, Ross Hodge, to replace McCaslin as a new head coach at North Texas. So you win a championship, and your coach isn't even there 24 hours to fully enjoy it because he's off to the next job. And that's unfortunate, but it is what it is. So So that was the fourth meeting of the year. UAB had won in the semifinals of their Conference USA tournament, but then North Texas got the last laugh, winning the NIT. The WNIT championship is tomorrow. The KU women, the Jayhawks, will host Columbia at Allen Fieldhouse tomorrow at 4:30. You can watch it on TV on CBS Sports Network as the Jayhawks have a chance to win the WNIT crown. K-State won the WNIT back in 2006. So that would be a second one here in the state of Kansas. Of course, the NCAA tournament Final Fours taking place tonight. It's the women's Final Four. And the first game, it'll be 32-2 LSU taking on Virginia Tech, who's a one seed at 6 o'clock. And then the overall number one seed, undefeated South Carolina, 36-0, face 30-6 Iowa in the other national semifinal. That'd be a great matchup. Aaliyah Boston, outstanding player, inside player for South Carolina, but can pop outside from time to time. And then Caitlin Clark, who had a triple-double in the Elite Eight. Against Louisville. The winners of those two games will play for the championship. As Dusty pointed out yesterday off the air, they have been playing in the evening, but this one's going to be a Sunday afternoon game, which I don't know if that's the best thing for the women's sport. They need prime time in the evening. Can you imagine the men having the national championship at 2 in the afternoon on Sunday?
Yeah.
I don't like it for the women's
game. No, I looked at that. I was like, wait. Because I was like, they didn't do that last year, did they? And I looked, and it was a 7 o'clock tip.
Why don't they do it Sunday night?
Yeah, I don't know. They've always done it on Sunday night.
Is it because of Major League Baseball? I mean,
it could be. It could be
ESPN has primetime Sunday night baseball.
Sunday night baseball, and
that's right, because ESPN broadcasts the Final Four, don't they? Mm-hmm. That might be why it is. Because see, in the past, what's happened the last few years? I know last year is that in a lot of the last few years, it's the women's championship is actually the day after the men's. Like, it ends up being to where they're still prime time in the evening on a Tuesday night, or you know what I'm saying? Because the men's is always Saturday, the Final Four, Monday the championship. But I know there have been times where the women's championship has been after the men's.
Yeah, and
so thus there's a weekday prime time slot available.
Yeah, last year it was on Sunday night. So okay. I don't know what this got to be the baseball thing, I would think.
But baseball was started, I
it was
think,
started last year.
In March,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know why they did that. I don't think that served the women's game very well. But, I mean, people still tune in that really care, I guess. But at the same time, I think you'd get some other people if it was primetime Sunday night. The men's Final Four games take place on Saturday night, of course. In Houston, Florida Atlantic, which eliminated K-State in the Elite Eight, 35-3, takes on San Diego State, 31-6 in the first national semifinal. First ever appearance in the Final Four for both those programs, and it's also the first appearance ever in the Final Four for Miami of Florida. They're 29-7, take on the heavy favorite now, UConn, who's 29-8, the highest seed remaining, a four seed. They'll be making their sixth appearance in the Final Four, and they've won multiple championships. Hurricanes Huskies will tip off at 7:49 on CBS on Saturday night. San Diego State is a really interesting story. I was reading about this yesterday and today, and I'm pulling for the Aztecs to win it all. I am. I'm pulling for San Diego State, and here's why. So in 2020, as we all know by now, COVID took over the world. And we went through situations with state basketball where there are teams that were going into the semifinals that who knows what could have happened and were robbed of that opportunity. They worked so hard to get to that point. We saw it at the high school level. We also saw it in college. And, of course, we saw it pro, too. But college, we know what happened with Kansas that year. Kansas was going to be the number one overall seed. Udoka Azubuike, Devon Dotson, they were the favorites to win it all. Now, whether KU would have won it all, we don't know. We never will. They were robbed of that opportunity due to COVID. Nobody's fault, per se. And so Kansas then talked about that last year. When they made their run and won a national championship, they were doing it for Udoka, for Devon Dotson, and others that weren't able to finish and maybe win a title in 2020. So really bad luck for KU. You know, Baylor had the same thing. Baylor was highly seeded in 2020. They were looking forward to making a run in a national championship. And then the very next year, they did win the national championship against Gonzaga. Then Kansas won it all. But Kansas and Baylor, you know, they're big-time programs, Power 5 conference. They're going to have multiple chances probably to get back there. Now, not the exact same roster, obviously. But San Diego State, a lot of people forget about this, and I had forgotten. But San Diego State would have been more than likely a two seed in that tournament. They were 30-2. In fact, they were ranked number one or two in the country, right there along with KU, for a good portion of the latter part of the year. They were 26-0 to start the year. They were 30-2, San Diego State Aztecs, going into the NCAA tournament. But the tournament bracket, of course, was not revealed. And San Diego State ended up not playing. And it was their best year that they had ever had. Kawhi Leonard, of course, played at San Diego State and had a great, some good years with Kawhi, but this was the best overall season San Diego State ever had. They have three or four players that were on that team that are on this year's team. And I was reading the story. Of course, there's guys that were on that team that lost their eligibility due to graduation, mm-hmm. but they were there supporting the team in the Elite Eight against Creighton. And so they are having a chance, at least some of these players, to a little bit of redemption to where they are playing coming up tomorrow night in the Final Four against Florida Atlantic with a chance to win a national championship. So they kind of get a second lease on life. But not all their teammates are able to do that. But they can kind of live through the teammates that are still playing that have eligibility. And so one of the players was talking about how he had been working really hard to get back for the NCAA tournament in 2020. And he had a knee injury, and he'd worked really hard, and he'd been cleared. And he called a teammate and said, "Hey, bro, I'm good to go, man. Good news. I'm ready to go for the tournament." And he goes, "You haven't heard? What? Tournament's canceled." Listen, that just rips your heart out. It rips your heart out. And listen, it was so tough, and it brings back emotions for me as well, because I was covering Beloit, and I don't want to rehash wounds. But, especially when you see what Grady Dick has done at KU now. Grady Dick being one of the best freshmen in America, probably going to be a lottery pick at NBA after just 1 year in college if he decides to go pro. And the Beloit Trojans were going to play Wichita Collegiate with Grady Dick in the semifinals in 2020, and Beloit was two wins away from the first ever state championship. They had made the state title year before. They had focused on getting back to win it all. They felt like they let one slip away against Girard. And I knew there was a chance that something crazy was going to happen, unfortunately. Didn't really know for sure until really after the game when Beloit beat Nemaha Central. And, of course, the girls were allowed to play the next day in 3A. They let everybody get one round of games in, and we couldn't do two more days. And I still sit back, and you go in hindsight, go, why not? But at the time, it was fear. A person had passed away at a facility in Kansas City that really, I think, sped up the process of canceling stuff. If Rudy Gobert doesn't test positive and what happened in Oklahoma City between the Jazz and the Thunder that night, if that didn't happen, because I was driving back from Hutchinson with my son, and he had his phone, and he said the Thunder game was postponed tonight. And I said, well, that's weird. Why? And he said, Gobert's got COVID. And I said, and they immediately postponed the game. And I said, we're done. I said, we're done. I said, we will not be coming back to Hutchinson. I remember interviewing Coach Eilert, I believe, the next day. And we both thought it was very unlikely that we were going to play. And we did an interview anyway, just in case. But we didn't know for sure at all. But we just, the gut told us this was going to be it. We weren't going to be able to finish the tournament. So, that would have been unbelievable to have, see, I don't know if Beloit would have beat Grady Dick in Wichita Collegiate. But can you imagine had they played him and Beloit did beat Grady Dick in Collegiate? What a story we'd have today. The guy that is a lottery pick, Beloit, beat his team, and he was the star of that team when he was a sophomore at Wichita Collegiate. Then he went to Sunrise Christian Academy the next year. And for Collegiate, it stinks because they had a chance to win a title. They had a star in Grady Dick, and then, of course, he left Collegiate right after that season. So they never, any team that was still alive, St. Mary's had a heck of a run that year. They finally got a state tournament. They won a state game, and it could have been Beloit St. Mary's in a rematch of a double overtime game the year before in Substate. Central Plains Girls, they would have won it. Everybody knows they would have won it, but technically they didn't get a championship. It's the, what do they call it? The
Forever Four.
The Forever Four. And so San Diego State, going back to the college side of things, this affected tons of high school kids and people across the country. Now, some states finished. Nebraska finished. Missouri finished. Unfortunately, Kansas didn't. Other states didn't as well. And so the NCAA tournament, you thought, well, maybe we'll have it, but just won't have fans in the stands. Well, no, it was just fear. Everybody freaked out because of fear. And at the end of the day, fear won. And so these kids for San Diego State, the kids at KU, Baylor, any team that was going to be in the tournament that year, there's tons of stories. There's other teams that finally made the tournament that may never make it back. There was Cinderella that had qualified, that was going to go. The Big 12 tournament didn't get finished. I remember that was weird. We had Haney on, and he was getting prepared for a game, and next thing you know, it was, boom, done, over. They weren't going to play.
The Big East played one half of one game.
That's right.
They played the 1-8 game. They played half of it, and they didn't come out for the second half.
That's right. I forgot about that. What a wild situation that was, too. But San Diego State was one of those teams impacted severely because they were finally great, man. They had an unbelievable year, 30-2, and they were robbed of a chance to make a run in the tournament. And we have no idea. They might have won it all. They might have lost first round. But some of those players are getting a second chance, just like some of those KU players did last year and Baylor did a couple years ago. And so I am really pulling for San Diego State to win it all. They're the best defensive team remaining. They play suffocating defense. Offensively, they're challenged. Florida Atlantic is a very athletic team, as we saw against Kansas State with a seven-footer. That'll be interesting to see how San Diego State handles that. That's the first matchup. Second matchup, I think everybody in the world is going to pick UConn to win. I think just when you think you have it figured out is when you get fooled. I'm cheering for Miami to win because I want somebody else to win the national championship. If we come this far with all the upsets, let's just not hand UConn another title.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, if we're going to make it a full-fledged upset of a tournament, let's finish the deal, you know? Let's not run 99 out of 100 yards and then stop shy of the tape. Let's go ahead and knock UConn out. Now, Husky fans out there are like, whoa, 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 back up the truck and stop that. We're the best seed remaining. It's not our fault everybody else got upset. And it's true. It's not. And you look great. You dominated everybody. But there's many times you see a team come flying in, heavy favorite, and then all of a sudden they have the pressure of being the heavy favorite. And, you know, it kind of goes back to the K-State situation. If K-State would have played Duke or Kentucky and lost, people wouldn't feel so bad about it. Or K-State might have won because they were the underdog. Then they're the favorite against Florida Atlantic and Butler and La Loyola, and they don't get it done. Maybe that's what's going to happen with UConn. UConn, you know, people are talking about UCLA, Gonzaga coming out of the West, KU coming out of the West. People, there are some people at UConn. But UConn was an overwhelming favorite. If UConn goes into the Final Four here against Houston, and on the other side it's Alabama and Duke, Do you think UConn is a heavy favorite? No, of course not. In fact, they might be sitting there going, we're one of the underdogs. Instead, now, all the pressure shifts to, you're supposed to win this. How can you not win a title, Dan Hurley, when you're going up against a 5 seed from the ACC that had a down year, a 9 seed maybe from the Florida Atlantic from Conference USA, and, oh, yeah, a 5 seed that really struggles to score in San Diego State? I mean, UConn's got to be sitting there, fans already chalking up the parade to get ready for, just like K-State fans were chalking up moving on to the Final Four. Or getting tickets for Houston. And when we get into that situation, how many times do we see it, guys? It happened to KU many times. I know it happened in 2011 when they were all getting ready with VCU. Well, no 11's going to make the Final Four. No team from the first four is going to make the Final Four. Kansas is the 1 seed, dude. It's been a great run for Shaka Smart, but it ends today. And then Kansas went 2-for-21 from three, and VCU went to the Final Four, and UConn, I think, won it that year and benefited from it. Because Butler was in there, and VCU, and UConn, and so forth and so on. And Kansas fans had to get refunds. They had to sell their tickets and lose money, basically, unloading their Final Four tickets because they weren't going to go. So I think it's easy for everybody to immediately say UConn, without thinking about it, is going to win it all. And we may all predict that to happen anyway. But just when you think you have things figured out, this is when Miami of Florida is going to beat UConn, probably. So here we go. Final Four, San Diego State and Florida Atlantic. Who you picking and why?
I think San Diego State, just because they're a little bit better team, but I don't know. I guess I don't know if they're a better team or not, but because Florida Atlantic's probably underseeded overall, but
35-3.
Yeah, I don't know. I think San Diego State will still take it.
I'm picking San Diego State to win in a grinder in the low 60s, maybe upper 50s. Florida Atlantic has played some lower scoring games. They beat Tennessee 62-55. They're capable of playing at that level. Memphis was in the 60s and they won. I got San Diego State.
I'm picking Florida Atlantic.
All right.
It's kind of the same concept, but I just the consistency that I've been seeing them play with, and it was even through before they played K-State, right? Mm-hmm. They've got a lot of different guys that can do a lot of different things, and I'm going to pick Florida Atlantic to get the win there.
All right. And then the other one is Miami of Florida versus UConn. Who are you picking? Dusty, you go first.
I'm going to pick UConn.
Okay.
Jason? If we're asking who we truly think is going to win, I'll say UConn.
I truly believe that UConn should win. But I'm going to, because of the reason I said earlier, and plus the fact I'm really pulling against UConn, and I want anybody else to win it, I'm going to take Miami of Florida. And I don't think it'll be Miami of Florida against Florida Atlantic. I just don't think you're at Florida, two Florida schools there. So
yeah, basically both Miami schools, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to take Miami, Florida against San Diego State, which means it'll be UConn against Florida Atlantic more than likely. Are you this is a tough question for, obviously, fans of K-State. And even KU, too, because KU got bounced in the second round. K-State, the disappointment last weekend, losing to a team that you would have to watch now in the Final Four. Are you going to watch like you normally would the Final Four? Are you going to be less inclined to watch as much of the Final Four? More inclined because of the underdog stories?
I if you're asking me in general, I think it would be the same as any other year for me.
Okay.
I'm not going to watch because I'm not going to be around. I'm actually going to a thing tomorrow night, so I can't actually watch it live. But if I were able to, it would be just normal for me. I would watch the games as I normally would. It'd be tough to watch that first game. I would have to, ease myself into it after the disappointment from the weekend, last weekend. But if it wasn't K-State that got beat out and it was just you're asking me because there's different teams or underdogs in this tournament,
sure,
I would definitely be watching it just like I would any other Final Four.
Jason? Probably, more inclined, less inclined?
Probably about the same.
Okay.
You know, there's been years where there's teams that I'm not super locked into or really rooting for or against. Mm-hmm. There's been years like that before, but since you started the tournament, just kind of see what happens. So probably about the same as same interests.
I'll watch. I think I'm less inclined, yeah. Especially the first game. I think the second game I'll be more into it because I really do watch. I mean, UConn's really good. They're fun to watch. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are fun. If you just enjoy pure basketball, I like UConn. San Diego State kind of muddies it up. So it's not as sexy, as I say before, when you play a lot of great defense, but I respect it. But I'm more inclined to tune in at about 7 o'clock and catch the last part of the first game and not be worried about sitting in my chair at 5:09, whereas if KU's in it or K-State's in it or a Big 12 team's in it or the Blue Bloods are in it, I'm more likely to be sitting down at 5:09 ready to go. So for me, to answer my own question, I'm less inclined, at least for the first game. And by the way, UConn, they have won four. They've been in the Final Four now the sixth time, and they've won four titles. In 1999, they beat Duke, and Duke was really good. UConn was really good. In 2004, they beat Georgia Tech. That was Georgia Tech was a four seed, remember? They beat KU in the Elite Eight in overtime in St. Louis. That was Bill Self's first year. 2011, they benefited big time by the VCU, Butler, UConn. It was kind of a similar Final Four in regards to there wasn't a lot of favorites and top seeds there, and UConn won in one of the worst national championship games in the history of the game.
It was so bad.
Oh, God. Butler was horrible, and UConn won much better. 53-40. It was brutal to watch. And then UConn won it all against Kentucky. I can't remember how good Kentucky was in 14, 60-54. So UConn, they've been in the Final Four six times. And what's interesting is they're 4-for-4 in championship games. So they've been to the Final Four five times, and four times they get to the final, and they won it all. That's a lot better than a lot of teams. Like, Tom Izzo and Michigan State, for example. Lots of Final Fours, made it to the championship game a few times. I mean, that's pretty impressive. KU has been to more Final Fours over that period of time, I believe, but percentage wise, UConn is hitting, they're hitting 800.
Yeah.
That's pretty dang good once you get there.
Yeah.
They're favored to hit 833 and get 5 out of 6 because they're favored to win it now. So, all right, who are you cheering for?
I think I'd like to see Florida Atlantic.
Are you?
I do. I like the way they play.
Some K-State fans would be like, there's no way I want Florida Atlantic to move on because they beat us. And there's others that say, well, if they beat us, then we can say we lost to the champions.
Yeah, and that's not in my thought process. Okay. I'm not going to say I want them because I can say we lost to the national champs. I just do like the way they play basketball.
Gotcha.
They don't have like that standout guy that just plays a team. I'm a Spurs fan, so I like teams that play team basketball, right? And so that's just kind of the way it is for me. And I do. I like the way they play, and I definitely don't want Miami to win it. I don't know if I can deal with Nigel Pack winning the championship I've been wanting Miami to get knocked out just for personal reasons.
Let me ask you a question.
It doesn't mean anything in general.
Why you got a personal thing against Nigel Pack?
It's one of those things that personally hurts when you see a dude go further than your team.
Okay.
It's nothing against Nigel Pack as a person individually. He did what he needed to do to go get.
So are you jealous because he's gone further than your team?
I don't know if that's what
it is. There has to be something to this.
It's just natural, right? Like, there's a lot of people that think that way, right? Like, if somebody leaves.
If you really like the player, if you really respect the player and did good things for your university, and he got $800,000 in a car, I think you would have taken the same deal.
I'm not. Yeah, 100% right, would have done the same thing if it was in front of me, right? Like, I'm not saying anything about that.
Right.
But I think it's just like kind of human nature to be like, he left and did better, right?
You've been scorned,
yeah.
I got
it's that, like that jilted lover.
Yes,
type.
Yeah.
It's the same type of deal. Yeah. I don't have anything actually against Nigel Pack. It just adds to the pain of getting beat out in the Elite Eight and then seeing one of your old guys that could have maybe been part of this team that is now in the Final Four, maybe a national championship game.
By the way, it's better to be a jilted lover than to get blindsided by a security guard at Dodger Stadium with a wedding proposal. You talk about actual pain.
Right.
Wow. The state track, or not state, regional track and field assignments just came out from Keisha. Just came down here. I'm pulling it up. Let's see. Ellsworth has to go out to Garden City. Yikes. Yikes. Russell goes out there too. Beloit and Concordia, Southeast Saline, Minneapolis, they will be at Nickerson. So track and field regional assignments. Nickerson is where Beloit and Concordia will be going. And I'm scrolling through here. Class 2A. Smith Center will be going to Blue Rapids or Valley Heights. This is where Smith Center is going. And then scrolling down to 1A. Looks like all of our schools, I believe, will be at Mankato. So that would be St. John's. And that would, of course, be Lakeside and Thunder Ridge and Lincoln and Rock Hills and Osborne and Sylvan Lucas. So, yeah, all of our Tipton, St. John's Tipton, all of those schools in our area will be at one place. Some years we've kind of had them split up a little bit. So that'll be good from a coverage standpoint.
It's good from a coverage standpoint. I know that Coach Tiernan was hoping he'd go west again like he did last year.
Oh, Coach Tiernan, quit whining. Just move. No,
it is like it because you're always on that. Like when you're Osborne and Sylvan and even Tipton some years because they're not with St. John's and track. So some years Tipton would go and Thunder Ridge too. Mm-hmm. Would end up being on that west part of it. And they're just always on that line of whether I'm going to go west or east. And, yeah, everybody's going east.
All right. So there's that. And Dusty will get that posted at ncksports.com here later today. And, by the way, we mentioned the Royals lost yesterday. If you're wondering about opening day, the Braves beat the Nationals 7-2. Yankees shut out the Giants 5-0. Baltimore Orioles, that was a team I overlooked in my predictions yesterday. Maybe I should have picked Baltimore to make it as a wild card. Nobody said that yesterday. Maybe I should change my mind. They beat the Red Sox 10-9. The Cubs, as Jason said, beat the Brewers 4-0. Marcus Stroman got the first pitch clock violation of in the history of baseball, by the way. That's something to be proud of. The Rays shut out the Tigers 4-0. I had the Rays as a wild card. The Rangers beat the Phillies 11-7. The Royals, of course, lose 2-0 on just two hits against the Twins. Blue Jays outlast the Cardinals 10-9. Blue Jays had 19 hits in that game. Pirates edged the Reds 5-4. The Marlins lose to the Mets 5-3. White Sox beat the Astros 3-2. It's the first time in 10 years the Astros have lost their opening day game. Isn't that wild?
Yes.
Rockies beat the Padres 7-2. Don't the Rockies always start out really well? They start out really well, and then they kind of flounder. Like, they have a good month of April, it seems. A's beat the Angels 2-1. Dodgers beat the D-backs 8-2. And the Mariners shut out the Guardians 3-0. Those are the finals yesterday. We mentioned the Royals are off today. There are only five games on the schedule today. It's the Marlins and the Mets from Miami. Houston hosting the White Sox tonight. And the Padres will be at home against the Rockies. The Mariners and Guardians will battle in Seattle. And the Dodgers, fresh off their opening win yesterday, will take on the D-backs. So there's only five games to watch. After everybody in action yesterday, there's five games today. And then the Royals back in action tomorrow at 3:10 against the Twins. Once again, Jordan Lyles will be the Royals' starting pitcher, making his Kansas City Royals debut. I like the powder blues, but if we're going to lose in them, then let's scratch it. Stop wearing them if that's going to be a deal. I don't know. I've heard a lot of people talk about before in regards to color uniforms. We've talked about K-State's uniforms before. I personally think the lavender is cool. I personally think the dark purple shorts with lavender looks atrocious because I just, my eyes can't handle it. It's like, go ahead and give me lavender shorts with the lavender. Just make it all lavender. I'm cool with that. That's just me. I love
that. That's what their normal lavender set is now.
Right.
They only do the purple shorts one time a year.
Oh, so, I hate that. Yeah. I hate the purple shorts with the lavender. Now, I like purple shorts with the purple jerseys fine. But the lavender. But I love the lavender. I do love that. And in Kansas, there's KU fans, and my son's mentioned this before. He says, yeah, Kansas needs to wear the red. I'm like, oh, dude, red's not a good one. It's like, why is that? I said, I remember the first time to wear red when I was alive in 1986 against Duke in the Final Four. I'm like, why did they switch to red? And they lost to Duke, and Archie Marshall got hurt and everything else. And I'm like, oh, and I think Danny Manning got in foul trouble. And I'm like, please burn the red jerseys. Never, ever wear them again. And now they've kind of had like the sunflower jersey. I think that one's kind of cool. I saw those walking around, at the Big 12 tournament in Kansas City. I saw K-State fans with some lavender. I love the lavender look, that, you know, the sweatshirt. You got one of those. Mm. I think those are cool looking. And then the KU, the sunflower jerseys, you know, a little flowery, of course, but the color scheme, some people don't like them. I really like them. And I saw people walking around wearing them at the Big 12 tournament. I'm like, dude, I think the more I see them, the more I like them. So, once again, merchandising, right, that we talked about with the colors and everything and the color scheme. So, powder blue, I'm all for it. But if it means the Royals are going to lose, then let's go ahead and burn them. And let's wear something else. I don't care what it is. I do like the current ones, the new current, the KC current ones, version of those. I might want to get one of those someday. Okay, that's enough about merchandise and clothing. We will move on. Have a great weekend, everybody. Hey, if you were sick of March, it's over at the end of the day. Turn it to April. Don't get fooled by all those people trying to pull Franks on April Fool's Day tomorrow.